and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State and all over the world at wildmichiganradio.com. Being brought to you by Not Just Guns in Mason, Michigan, Cedar Street at 127, notjustguns.com. You can find them. They are on the south side of Cedar as you are heading into Mason. It's a very nice facility. Great guys over there, too. And as we are getting ready for bow season, gun season is shortly behind. If you want one of the new Bushmasters, one of the new Rugers, or maybe you're looking for something a little more tactical, maybe a little more home defense, they are happy to take care of you, and they will find what you need, not what they want to sell you, at Not Just Guns. And don't forget their Wednesday night auctions, Wednesday nights at notjustguns.com. We have bow season coming up here in Michigan, October 1st, and the day before that, it is our 14th year of being on the air. If you can believe that, I cannot believe that, because 14 years ago when we first did our first show, I'm like, well, we'll last a couple of weeks. We'll see what happens till they replace us. Well, we're still here, oddly enough. And one of the gentlemen that has been with us from the very beginning, Mr. Tom Nelson, host of the American Archer, joining us right now. Good morning, Tom. How are you, sir?
I am doing great, Duran, and I must say, congratulations on the long lifespan of the radio show, and it's on the air because you do such a great job.
Well,
kudos to you.
Thanks, Tom. That means tons to me. And honestly, I honestly did not think we were going to last this long. And it was, I guess when you have a show, they say put it together in a week. You don't know what to do, and then you realize that you really don't know a billionth of what you would like to know. That's when you start grabbing people in the industry. And I'll never forget, our very first show was my good friend Ted Brooks from Brooks Archery in Kalamazoo. Ted Nugent was on the show because he had heard about the show coming, and Linda Peters, hey, Ted wants to be on the show. And then Bob and Liz Miles from Martin Archery joined us. Mark Farner, my good friend, joined us on the second week of the show. So, I mean, look, it's been such a great, fun run thus far. And I have learned so much over the course of that time. I mean, it's amazing. And, what we've learned about archery, and so much has changed, Tom, in that amount of time as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Never ceases.
No, I remember conversations we would have about crossbows, about, the conversation at the time being, Michigan's looking at it, how is it going to affect the season? And how has, Tom, in your opinion, I mean, I think it's gotten a lot more people out in the woods.
It has. I think there's more people, according to some of the stats, from the DNR, of course, hunter numbers or license sales, et cetera, have been on the decrease. But you're seeing, I think, crossover, people that were hunters that were mostly primarily gun toters that thought, I'm going to take advantage of the nicer weather and early season and get a crossbow and join the ranks of the bow hunters out there. I think you're seeing a lot of that. And you're also seeing, this group of us that are aging that are perhaps no longer able to shoot a vertical bow, that are kind of switching over and taking up a crossbow also.
No, I really think it has changed, and it's extended the seasons for a lot of people that like to get out, and people that like the bow season have done it. Like you said, there's so many shoulder surgeries out there, and hardly any of them go well. You're hanging up the compound or the recurve at that time, but you still want to go out and bow hunt. And, there is a difference, though, that people, even if you're new to the thing, need to realize that they don't have crossbows, that is, have the long distance kinetic energy that a compound would have because of the short stroke and the bolt and the weight and everything else going into it.
Yeah, no matter, you still have to be ethical when you're out there and think about, the shot, the distance is the animal going to move. And, you know, when you launch an arrow out there over 40 yards, things can happen. And you mentioned kinetic energy, and, you know, with a lighter crossbow bolt and such, sure, you might be able to really shoot a tight group out there at 50 yards or in some cases farther, but, you know, is that arrow still going to have the penetration and such? So you, mm-hmm. you need to do a little study and be very aware of just how capable and what your equipment can do. You know, you need to know whether it's a recurve or a longbow or a compound or a crossbow. You need to be familiar with your equipment. That's the first thing you need to be before you even hit the field.
Absolutely. Tom Nelson, our guest here, host of the American Archer. And we're talking about bow season coming up. Tom, this is your favorite time of year. I mean, this is October 1st is like your favorite day.
It is. You're just making me smile when you say that because my wife, other friends, family members are always like amazed at how giddy I get as October 1st approaches and when it rolls around and it's just hard to describe. And you've heard the old adage, you know, like a kid at Christmas time. But, well, it is for me. I really, really look forward to it. And I make a point, Grant, you know, hosting the American Archer TV show, we're out and about a lot. We travel a lot, starting in August, you know, right through the end of January in different states, hunting and stuff, taking advantage of the Western hunts and things. But with that said, I always, always make a point of being home to hunt October 1st. I do. I've flown home and, you know, the night before many times from trips just so I could be in the tree stand on my own place October 1st. I love it. It's a deep, rich tradition that I'm, you know, never, I'm always going to be home for.
Tom Nelson, we've been following Doug Roberts and his deer Kaiser over at Conquest Sense. You know, a monster, typical, 4-year-old deer. And it shows just recently that he had shed his velvet. I mean, this is like getting really close to the October 1st, you know, opening day.
Yes.
What do you think the chances we might run across something that's just starting to shed or still may be in?
You know, it's possible. And with that said, I just checked some trail local cameras here that I have out Wednesday, and I actually had a pretty nice 8-point on camera that was still in full velvet. But a host of other bucks that were on these three cameras were all clean and hard-horned. But it could happen, you know. I personally have never seen one in Michigan after October 1st. And, you know, when it happens overnight, you know, just like, you know, with Kaiser, when he cleans up, he'll be, you know, in velvet one day and then he'll be slick horn the next. It just bingo and it happens. So, is it possible? Sure. But oftentimes when you see those antler or, you know, velvet covered antlers in October and such, it's generally a stag. It's a buck that's lost his testicles, had an accident or something, or an antler doe, which can happen.
Oh, sure.
So, as a matter of fact, I have two friends here in Michigan that have both shot antler does that were in velvet. So a really unique and rare trophy.
Yeah, it is. I've seen a couple over the years in the papers and whatnot when somebody had shot like the 32-point doe. Something completely freakish. Yeah. And, you know, and you'll never even see that buck in a lifetime, it seems. But, you know, here comes this doe that has no idea what's going on, the poor thing. And, you know, it's just, again, probability. And it's out there. It's just nature and it's how it works. But Tom Nelson is our guest here. We're going to speak more with Tom in a few minutes about, you know, what's going on here the 1st of October and what he expects to see. Especially if you've taken your time, you've gone out and you've done your trail cameras, you've stayed out of the woods as much as possible, just kind of get in, get out quick, as Tom says. But Tom, we're looking forward to that, and we appreciate you joining us here on the show. So hang on for me, if you will, and we are going to thank our friends at Not Just Guns in Mason, Cedar Street at 127. Again, don't forget their Wednesday night auctions online, and even if you don't like it, they'll work with you, man. It's a great, great group to work with. We're proud to have them here on the show called Wild Michigan.
Hi, this is Cuz Strickland with Mossy Oak, and you're listening to Wild Michigan with Duran Martinez.
It sits above the mantle on a couple rusty nails, and it's worth a bunch of money, but it damn sure ain't for sale. The good Lord only knows all the stories it could tell. Granddaddy's gone.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by Conquest Scents. Find them online, conquestscents.com, makers of the VS1 and Evercalm Plus. Man, they've got so many new products, the Scrape Maker and some of the other things that we'll be talking about here. We talked about with Doug Roberts here not that long ago. You can find them on our podcast at wildmichiganradio.com. Real quickly, Tom, we talked about you, and I want to make sure that you know we talked about you. Doug and I were talking about that Scrape Maker tool, and I remember when that first came out. You know, I was over there at Wolf Creek, and you're showing me this, and you'd give me a couple of those, and I looked at it going, what? It really didn't kind of, you know, it looked like one of those gimmick things you saw.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. I mean, and you know, like I said, we were talking about you because apparently you kind of, you know, you are like, love the scrapes.
Yes, I do. I'm a big fan of making mock scrapes.
Now, what about that tool? What did you think when you saw it? Because, again, I'm not picking on Doug because apparently sure. The thing works.
Oh, yes. You know, and I've been making mock scrapes for probably close to 30, maybe even 40 years. I don't want to age myself, but I've been bow hunting a long time. And their mock scrapes are extremely effective, but they have to be done correctly, you know, and there's a lot to them. You know, there's the scent part of it, the visual part, the overhanging branch. And if you don't have the combination of all the above, your mock scrape that you make will never get hit in the first place. But from the visual end of it, you know, I'll use for the scent wise, I'll use, you know, Evercom on the licking branch overhead, and I'll use the S1 or Rutting Buck in the scrape itself. But you've got to make it visually appealing. And I used to take a stick or a rake, and I'd find an overhanging branch that looked like it would work, and then I'd rake up underneath it, you know, make it look like a scrape. But with the Scrape Maker, it's a smaller, lighter tool that I don't have to take a rake or something big or grab a stick and try to, you know, dig up something. But you can actually quickly make the scrape with this, dig it up. It looks like a hoof print, you know, or hoofs digging it. And then it has a hoof print molded into it where you can place it down, kind of step up, put a little pressure, and in the dirt there, after you dug it up, put a nice buck's footprint in there. And that seals the deal. People don't realize the last thing, hunters don't realize, that as a buck is leaving, as he's done scraping, he steps in that scrape. And every active scrape that's made, you'll see, if you look, you'll see, if a buck's hit it, you'll see his print in it. And so it just helps sell the whole thing. And plus, it's got the serrated edges, so you can make rubs with it. It's mm-hmm. for an inexpensive tool, it's a handy little bugger. But, you know, stick it in your pack, and I use it constantly. I've already put some mock scrapes down, believe it or not. I start early, and as soon as bucks are starting to get hardhorned, because they'll go around and make boundary scrapes and stuff. But sure. I'm getting my area prepped already.
Tom Nelson, host of the American Archer, our guest here on Wild Michigan. Tom, I'm going to ask what the biggest mistake we would make is opening day. Because, I mean, you could talk about everything that could go right, you know, but I don't think we've ever asked that question. What do you, think, you know,
yeah,
might be the biggest mistake?
I could do a whole hour program with you on mistakes.
I've got a lifetime on time.
You know, some of the most common mistakes that I personally see, and they oftentimes make me shake my head because I look at them as being so elementary, you know, like, you know, why are you doing this? Number one, in my opinion, the biggest mistake hunters make is that they hunt the same tree stand over and over, regardless of the wind. You know, well, I can get away with it, or maybe they'll come from the other direction. And that's a huge mistake. Deer can and will definitely pattern you as a hunter. So the same goes for your entry into that stand. If you're walking the same path in every day, exiting the same path out, that residual scent that you're leaving behind, deer 24 hours later are picking up on that, and they're going, there's a hunter using this, or a hunter's in this area. Hence, they'll take and avoid that. And that's, I call it tree stand burnout. You hear from bow hunters all the time, hunters in general. you know, when I first knew that, I was seeing a lot of deer there, and now I'm not seeing squaw. I don't know where they went. Well, they wised up in a hurry and have vacated your area. So my word of advice there is, even if you're 40, 50 yards away, because hunters, I'll bring this up to them, oh, I only have, you know, a 20-acre spot I can hunt and such. Well, move. Have another stand 100 yards away that you can go to, or change your exit and entry strategy. You know, come a different way. If you exit, you know, from the north, go out the opposite way when you leave that night, even if it's a longer walk. But that's you know, and again, I'm rattling on about it, but that's a real, real common mistake that you can't make. And never second guess the wind. If the wind is bad for that stand, stay out of it. Don't alert those deer to your presence. Get down, even if you have to forego hunting that night. Another real common mistake I see hunters make, when they're entering their stand, going across the wide open, maybe a chisel plow field or a cut bean field or a cut corn field, and in the dark in the morning, every deer in the vicinity sees you coming, you know, and you're getting blown at and alerted, and off they take. So think about those entry and exit strategies, you know, as far as the way you're doing it. And I guarantee you, your stand will stay fresher and you'll see more deer, and you're not going to spook everything out of the neighborhood.
Tom Nelson, our guest here on Wild Michigan. Tom, I know one thing I learned from you way, way back when is scent control. And with this first week, when people are getting out, it's going to change a lot of things, because there's going to be, no matter how much you try and keep off of you, there's going to be some new smells in the woods that are going to alert the deer as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've already washed all my stuff, because I've of course been hunting out west already, but I keep all my clothes in a scent tight container so that they're staying fresh and such. And, you know, I use the different sprays. I wash down well, and just always, other molecules are falling off you all the time. But I really believe you can knock your human scent down to a minimum where deer might pick up on it, but they go, oh, somebody was here yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, that's older scent. And the same thing goes with, like, the rubber boots. You know, don't wear leather boots out there. Wash your rubber boots, you know. Keep them out of the way. Don't pump gas with your hunting clothes on. Don't go to the restaurant for breakfast after you hunt with, you know, even your long johns on. Just really, really get dressed when you get to your hunting spot. Take them off before you get back in your vehicle and drive home. Just, it's all those little things that make a difference.
Yeah, and like you said too, these things may seem elementary, but it's been how long since, you know, we put the things away, put everything away, January 1st. You know, here it is 10 months later to the day that we're going out, you know, and we may have done this 100 years, but there's still going to be times that we make that mistake.
Absolutely, you know, and even right now, you know, we take your clothes, hang them out on the clothesline, if nothing more, air them out, you know, just let them sit out there in the wind and put them in a Tupperware tub, throw some leaves and stuff in there, just all kinds of little things you can do. But really, you know, you can't go overboard in scent control.
All right, Tom Nelson, thank you so much for 14 years of your friendship and advice. And we really appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Duran. Always enjoyable.
All right, Tom Nelson joining us here, the host of the American Archer. More coming your way next on Wild Michigan.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an altitude time, in a state 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late, another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Thanks so much to Tom Nelson, the American Archer, for joining us, talking a little bit about bow season coming up. And it's our 14th year. We are marking this show with as a kind of an anniversary thing. But our good friend Dan Kimmel from GreatLakesBass.com is joining us. And this is what I mean by our guests being tops and tireless, because Dan is currently on a lake somewhere in Michigan right now, and when I called to test the line, he was unhooking a large bass as we spoke. And you know what? This goes back to when I ran to Al Stewart, the Michigan from the Michigan DNR, the Upland Game Bird Specialist. One time we had him on the show, and he was turkey hunting with his son. He got away from his son for a few minutes just to talk with us. All of a sudden, the shot came, the bird was down, and Al had to go back to see what happened. But we thank each and every one of you guys and ladies for joining us. Dan, how are you, buddy? How's the fishing?
I'm good. We haven't been very long, but yeah, I had a thrown a buzzbait, which is always fun, and then the largemouth just pulled it under like a bobber, and but I hooked him right through the side of the cheek, even though I really didn't even set the hook right. So I guess I'd say that's pretty good. Maybe it's going to be a really good day.
You know what? It seems it's a little breezy out there, and I'm not sure what lake you're fishing, but the air temperature to me is beautiful out. I mean, this is my kind of fishing weather, and for fall bass, there's something special about that.
Yeah, the fall is my favorite time of year, always has been for as long as I remember. I look forward to it. I don't try to rush it here, but then I want to, you know, keep it as long as I can, so I don't want to hear anything about ice fishing yet or snow or... I need some fall fishing, so that was a fall kind of bite right there I just had.
Now, what makes, you know, sometimes I guess summertime they can get a little lethargic with the warmer water and you know, but yet that's pretty much the big time to fish. But why is fall so much different, and how are you approaching it in a different manner?
Well, probably I'm an impatient fisherman, I've probably said before. So I love fishing fast. I love fishing shallow. And what's great about fall is they're putting on the feed bag, because all they got to do right now, the only thing they need to do is eat. So they're going to eat and try to get as much weight on as they can, because they don't eat a lot in the winter. They eat a lot less, and they spend a lot more time inactive, you know, on places. So right now is the time they got to fatten up.
And of course, is bigger, brighter, and flashier the way you're going today?
Yeah, usually. It depends on the lake. This one's got a little murked up, but I try, because in the fall I want to catch big fish, because it's the best time to me to catch big fish, because the big fish, they're active for longer periods, and they're more vulnerable because they go a little crazy, and I like crazy.
I've seen Dan. He likes crazy. So now, do you want to divulge where you're at today, or what area? I mean, is that something you want to do?
Yeah, we're on Lobdell Lake. We haven't been here a couple of years. It's kind of my childhood lake. When I was finding out I love bass fishing, this was our Friday night, Memorial weekend at midnight, holding our jitterbugs up in the line, you know, air waiting for Dad to say, go. So I grew up on this lake. I don't know if there's any bass left alive, probably not since then, but I feel like I know these bass.
Well, and that's pretty cool too, that you're, you know, getting out someplace like that that's been a tradition for so long, and that's pretty much what Scott and you started in the world of bass fishing. Of course, you were a tournament fisher and now very active with GreatLakesBass.com. How has the 2019 been for the website and for bass fishing in general? Because I know that you're very politically active with bass fishing in Michigan as well.
Yes, I feel like I've spent too much time at meetings this year. I've been trying to figure out how to fix that, but I've gotten out a fair amount, pretty good, and it's just been a real weird up-and-down year with so much high water in places. And anymore, it seems like a lot of lakes, you almost have to relearn them every season, because so many things are changing so fast these days. So if you can keep up with that, and get the more you get out, the more you can keep up with that. The less you get out, the harder it gets. And, you know, you got people thinking this has been a really good year, and you got people thinking this has not been a really good year.
Yeah, you know, when we talked to Lance Valentine, too, I mean, about fishing, you know, like what he would mark waypoints on for walleye fishing. And this water, the water change with all the rain we had and everything else in the spring has dramatically changed even the Great Lakes, to the point that the water is so much higher. And that changes everything, like you said. It changes the whole game.
Yeah, record highs. Everything's a few feet deeper than you're used to. And, you know, for part of the year we had to back threw water away just to get to the ramp. You know, I was carrying my rubber boots a lot this year because you had to wade to get to the boat ramp. And, you know, on some lakes it's great because it gives the fish a lot more habitat to get into. And you'll see on some of these lakes in 3-4 years, the fishing will actually be better again because more small fish probably are able to survive. You know, more fish were able to spawn and do what they needed to, and it can lead to better fishing in a few years.
You know, I agree with that. I mean, we've seen walleye cycles. You know, we talk about this 10-year wave. Well, Lance and I were conversing about that. And we've been on since this show started 14 years ago. That was like the start of the wave for yeah. walleye fishing. And it's still going. Our year classes are great, and our numbers are way up. It's just incredible. But I guess we haven't followed the bass as much because it's more of a sport fish rather than a game fish for food.
Yeah, it's so variable. Not every lake does good with this, but a lot of lakes do. So it's very variable. But we're still seeing more than enough. You kind of want to look at it like every 10 years. If you have three or more really good spawns every 10 years, you usually have good bass fishing, as long as you don't mess something else up on purpose. So we're seeing that. We're seeing a lot of good classes, not every year, but most years. We're seeing good classes in most lakes. So that should mean better fishing in the next few years than we already have.
Dan Kimmel's our guest here. How has the smallmouth bass fishing been going?
Yeah, that's been for me in a few places have been real weird, but it's been real good overall, and they're still catching just so many big fish. And the Great Lakes right now is just unbelievable. You can't even hardly explain to somebody how many big fish. We're at a meeting Tuesday all day, and the DNR was showing charts from the 80s to today, and the size range of smallmouth bass now compared to then, it's hard to even believe the difference, how much bigger and how many more big fish there are. We are spoiled. This is the good, I keep saying it, these are the good old days right now.
They are. You know, we've seen, what was it, within a year's time, we've had two state records broken for smallmouth bass, and now, you know, we're on the BASS tour in places. And Lake St. Clair is getting just an incredible smallmouth bass fishery.
Yeah, last summer things settled later that we saw two of the biggest individual five bass weights ever. One of them was the biggest five smallmouth bass weight for the nation that FLW ever had. It was 28 pounds, 15 ounces, five fish, one guy.
Oh my, 28 pounds for five fish.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be you didn't know very many people that caught a 5-pound smallmouth. Now you've got people weighing in limits of them every weekend. It's unbelievable. They expect the record to be broke again. And I know three people have caught 9-pound bass in the last 2 years.
Wow, that's incredible. I know. we've had them here on the show. I mean, one of them was a guy just dock fishing off the backyard, you know, and yep. He ended up with a state record.
Crawler rig. Thought he was snagged.
Dan Kimmel's our guest here. Dan, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep you on hold for a couple seconds, get a couple of casts. We're going to come back. We're going to talk more about fishing and what to expect here in Michigan, all right?
Okay.
All right. Dan Kimmel's going to join us in another segment. Appreciate you joining us. I'm Duran Martinez. This is Wild Michigan being brought to you by Not Just Guns.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down, let this old world just spin around. I want to feel its sway, I want to feel its sway.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by Conquest Sense. Time now, get your Evercall out. We're getting ready for bow season here, coming up October 1st, and a little bit later on, we'll be using the VS1, and they've got some great new products. Make sure you check them out online, conquestsense.com. They're located in Davison, Michigan. Some great friends, and our good friend Dan Kimmel is joining us right now. He is on the boat fishing, and again, we appreciate that, you know, we get these guys whenever we can get them. And Dan says, I'm going to be fishing. If we get a good signal, absolutely. We greatly appreciate you joining us here, Dan, as you are currently fishing.
No problem.
Now who do you have? Who do you have with you? Let's make them a rock star as well.
Oh, he's shy, but I'll tell you. His name is Derek Bates. I call him the fire marshal, but he's retired
Wait a minute. Not East Lansing former firefighter Derek Bates.
Yeah, that's exactly who it is.
He's
kind of famous too, I guess.
Yeah, no, you tell
you know him anyways.
I do know him. It's been about.
He's had to put up me for decades.
I was going to say it's been about 25 years or longer that I've seen Derek Bates.
Yeah,
I used to work with a young lady he was just getting married to.
Lori,
yeah. Ask in between. Just say. I used to work with his wife at the print shop years ago, and unbelievable, man, that you're fishing with Derek, and that's cool. I know exactly who he is. He's a great guy, and let's talk a little bit more about this fall fishing. Particulars, you know, you're fishing topwater right now, running shallows, running things a little bit faster. What about some of these warmer days? I mean, because these you know, air temperatures are going to fluctuate so much, but what is that really doing for the water temps? Because now we have shorter days, the sun is less time, in the water heating things up. And even on warmer days, air temp for us, there's probably not a lot of fluctuation going on in the water.
No, it's everywhere I've been lately. It's steadily dropping, and it's getting down towards that real sweet zone. But it's perfect for fishing fast. I start with a buzzbait because I like to work some kinks out first thing, and I got a pretty decent one. And Derek's laying off me right now. He's throwing a spinnerbait, another good choice. But he caught a giant 6-incher, I think, so far, unless he stuck one in when I wasn't looking.
A 6-incher?
Yeah. Yeah. The fish thought he was, that's what I love about bass. That bass probably thought he's 4 pounds, but he was 6 inches.
Right. And that's true about bass fishing in general. And talk about the difference in the strike, because I know strike and fight, there's such a huge difference between both physically and how they hit between the smallmouth and largemouth bass.
Yeah, this time of year is kind of funny that even the big bass, sometimes you don't get like a lot of big smashes. That one I caught when you first called, I mean, he basically just pulled it under. It was just a ripple, and then my bait disappeared, but he had the whole thing. I mean, he had the entire body, and I have a big fat trailer because I'm, looking for big fish. But they'll swarm, and they'll be aggressive, and you're going to see more groups kind of tight together and more competitive, and that's always in the fisherman's favor when you got a bunch of fish competing, because they get even dumber.
Dumb is good when it comes to fish.
Yes, it is. I've had them this time of year on some, like, practically ram their nose right into the side of the boat trying to get that bait.
Wow, that's awesome. Dan Kimmel from GreatLakesBass.com is joining us here. Now, what's going on with the website, and what's happening right now? I mean, things have slowed down, I'm sure, in the legislature, things are always moving. Having a website like you do, it's continual. It's always work.
Yeah, it never takes a nap. I tell people, they say, "Are you working?" I'm like, "I'm always working. My website never calls. Google keeps asking me hours, and I don't have a way to tell it. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So, I try to keep people up on a mix of things. Fishing, I just sneak in stuff about the environment and the latest whatever chemical we need to think about or anything. We had a day and a half meeting on climate change, and they kept asking me to bring someone. I said It's hard to get a fisherman to go to that because they're not sure if they want to believe in it yet. But we were talking about how things are going to change, and there was a lot of jokes about bass fishing and a lot of laughs because everything the science has seen is the bass fishing is just going to get better and better and better. Not necessarily all the other fish. So I got some chagrin, and I got Derek's got one. I got some chagrin, and I got a lot of jokes, and a lot of laughs, and a lot of things. Yeah, that guy in the back, he's happy, anyways.
Yeah, you can always tell the bass angler when they're talking about climate change. He's the one with a big smile on his face.
Yeah, because Michigan, they're saying you'll be more like Missouri, Oklahoma in a few decades.
Well,
which
I kind of look. I look at this whole thing, and you know, I'm of the cyclical belief, even though I know because of the Industrial Revolution and all the things that we have done since, I'm sure there are things that we have contributed to an issue in the environment. I would be just lying if I said otherwise. But at the same time, this Earth is billions of years old. We will never exactly know, you know, everything about it and how it's going to react and how it's going to fix itself if it chooses to fix itself. So, you know, I'm not jumping on board with some little girl that popped off a Swiss Miss box at any point in time. Okay?
Yeah, I try to tell people to not get caught up in what you believe or like or don't like. Just be aware of things that may affect you and how they may, because occasionally there might be something we can do about it, or might be something we should do about it. Or, hey, good news, the bath system might get better. You know, what I know right now is the weather's so odd that you can pretty much count on what I said earlier. Every year it's going to be like a new lake on a lot of lakes, and it sure has been for me.
Well, you know, that, I mean, look, Michigan historically was a swamp. You know, I mean, pre-ice age, we were a ginormous swamp. And then, you know, and what caused the ice age, we can only speculate that it was an asteroid. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a million things that we could go into speculation, but we are going to have to improve what we're doing and watch at the same time. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's the only way
we can
do it.
I'm trying to upset people, but when I'm at a lake where they're saying, you know, the pike fishing used to be good, it's no good now. What's wrong? And I tell them, well, you put seawalls along all your shores, and you change the lake, and you change it so it's not conducive to pike anymore. You know, I'm not trying to point fingers and cause blame. I want people to understand that what we do can have action, you know, ramifications, and just be aware of that and see if you can do something differently maybe next time. You know, so everybody can enjoy fishing, because I want as many people fishing as often as I can get.
No, I agree. You go clearing out of weeds for a beach area or something like that, and you're going to wonder why something's not there. Well, you've destroyed the habitat. It goes the same below water as it does above. You know?
Right,
I mean,
right. Yeah, lakes are not swimming pools. So I tell you, we talk about that a lot. The two things we talk about really the most are how can we do something about the decline in participation and weed control for us inland and warm water anglers. the over control. We just want a happy medium.
Well, I tell you what, here's my suggestion about participation. Quit rewarding kids with everything instantly. Hunting and fishing is not about instant reward. It's about technique, it's about patience, about education, and then everything that goes along with it. When you have so much instant gratification in a world, you know, where everything is on your phone, or, you know, everybody gets a participation medal or whatever the case, you know, the fact that we actually have to earn something, work hard at something, is going to go away.
Yeah, we actually have a holiday meeting coming up next month about, we call it R3, retention, reactivation, and what's the other one? I can't remember now. I forgot one of the R3s.
Remembering?
You know, I talk on all my posts. I go into more detail than a lot of people do on social stuff, because I want people to think about the whole experience. I mean, a lot of us feel it, but I don't think a lot of us talk about it enough. And I get a few guys saying, you know, I just want to see the fish and tell me how you caught it. But I get a lot of people say, you know, I like your post because you tell a story and you talk about all the other things you're seeing and happening. You don't just do pictures of fish, you know, and that's
right.
You know, at least that's for me. I tell people I went to Brazil twice. I loved every minute of every day, fishing or not. It's,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's just an amazing experience. There's so much going on, but I see that everywhere I go. And I think the more people we can get to see that, the more people will get outdoors.
You know, I fish, like you talk about Brazil, I fished Ireland. You know, we went pike fishing. We went,
yep.
We went trout fishing on the same lake. And the only time anybody goes fishing out there for trout is during the mayfly. And then everybody else is just pike fishing, and that's kind of fly fishing for pike. And it's something very, very different. But look, I didn't score instantly when I went out there. I mean, this was a whole new thing for me to learn. But still, it was probably one of the greatest experiences in my life, because I got to be someplace else and fish with friends and learn the culture and everything else. So, again, man, it's going to take time. You know, don't expect things instantly. And, Dan, get back to fishing, and please tell Derek I said hello. It's been a long time.
Okay.
And we appreciate your time here on the show, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Appreciate it, too.
Absolutely. Dan Kimmel, GreatLakesBass.com. You can find a link to him on our website, WildMichiganRadio.com. Podcasts are up there. Thanks to Not Just Guns. Thanks to Compass and Tom Nelson, the American Archer. More coming your way. Whole another hour on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.